mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, there's just something special about those Friday night lights. A new high school football season kicks off tonight, and we'll get a preview. Also this morning, how cutting-edge technology is changing the way we experience many of the sports we love. To your health this morning, we've talked about the importance of getting your kids' hearing and vision checked for back to school. They're probably also due for a general wellness checkup as well. And in honor of the start of football season, a collection of tailgate recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, August 23rd, 2024. You know how every day it seems like there's got to be some story in the news that's all doom and gloom. Something that we should be afraid of, something we should be fearful of, wringing our hands over. Oh, the world's coming to an end. Oh, everything is so terrible. There's always some disaster story in the news. Here is today's. It says here, thousands of tarantulas will soon be marching their way across parts of the United States. Thousands of tarantulas marching their way across four states out west. Mating season is about to begin for tarantulas in Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Nevada. The spiders, and these are hearty beasts, these spiders. They cross deserts, highways, streets, even backyards just to get some. The migration actually already happened in Texas, so they've already been dealing with this. So next up, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Nevada. While tarantulas can bite, their venom is not toxic to humans and is usually compared to a bee sting. Okay, you can say that all you want, but I don't want to be bitten by a tarantula. So when I see this story, basically what I'm hearing in this story and the way I'm reading this, don't visit Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Nevada for a while. I mean, that's... Make your plans to go somewhere else over the next several weeks with the thousands of migrating tarantulas in heat. No, thank you. No, thank you. I think I will pass. Here's something you might want to do, though, if you are looking to get away. You can avoid Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Nevada and all of the tarantulas by heading to America's largest sushi convention in New York City. Yes, that's right. SushiCon in New York City next month. It's technically called True World's Food Expo. True World's Food Expo. That's the official name, but everybody calls it SushiCon because it is a sushi all-you-can-eat extravaganza. Think bluefin tuna, salmon, eel, yellowtail, and more. And you can watch the sushi chefs cut tuna from a 400-pounder right in front of you and then sample it right there on the spot. SushiCon being held at the Flatiron Metropolitan Pavilion. Is that how you pronounce it? I don't know. I'm not familiar with New York. I'm not that familiar with New York City. But it'll be September 22nd. You can buy an early bird ticket for $100 on the website eventspass.com. But you need to get the early bird ticket by September 2nd. After that, the price goes up $20 to $120. So SushiCon coming up September 22nd in New York City. Man, are we excited. Okay, what else is going on? Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories on this TGI Friday, a new study reveals that people in Maryland are the ones that curse the most in the U.S. I feel like we had a story like this in the news last week or something. But this popped up again. I don't know if it's a repeat of the same story, but I think it's different because some of the data here, I don't recall being the same as the story we were talking about before. So I'll share it here. It says those in Maryland curse the most in the United States. This was a global study from the word finder service WordTips They say Maryland takes the number one spot in the USA. And again, they looked at this all over the world, but we don't care about the rest of the world. We only care about the U.S. The U.S., by the way, is ranked number one for the most potty mouth country in the world. The U.K. and Australia are number two and three. So interesting that they're all English speaking countries. I don't know. Just thought I would mention that. But Maryland, number one. Louisiana, the second most potty mouthed state. And the third most foul-mouthed state is Georgia, which was last year's top state. So Georgians have gotten a little calmer, apparently. Somebody washed their mouth out with soap, and they are now only number three on the list. This, I thought, was kind of interesting. Cleveland is said to be the most foul-mouthed city in Ohio and the sixth most foul-mouthed in America. Cleveland, number six in America, number one in Ohio. So I can hear the people in Cleveland saying, yes, we're number one. That's interesting. There are some interesting data points in this, too. As I was digging into some of the numbers, Detroit is one of the biggest potty-mouthed communities, cities in the nation. Nearby Ann Arbor, one of the least potty-mouthed cities in the country. So goes from most to least in just a span of a few miles from Detroit to Ann Arbor. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Let's see. I don't know. Personally, I think it's bulls. Yeah. speaking of reasons for you to swear, if you like roundabouts, you'll love this. The city of Dublin, not Dublin, Ireland, Dublin, Ohio, Columbus suburb, is the latest to try out a strategy for improving safety at some intersections in the community. City officials have narrowed the size of the travel lanes in the roads, put in colorful stickers, and installed flower boxes. Like in the middle of the intersection. They say narrowing the lanes will draw attention to the intersections and hopefully influence drivers to slow down. That's the idea. You put in the flower boxes, you've basically got an obstacle in the middle of the intersection. You got to slow down to avoid it. Narrow the lanes, same deal. Apparently, it has been done at one intersection already and two others will soon see similar design changes as part of a pilot program. So if it catches on, if it works, expect to see this pop up in more cities. And you can imagine that the more places in Ohio that adopt this, the more cities in Ohio will be at the top of the most foul-mouthed cities in the country. Yes. I think there's a cause and effect there. I think we can anticipate there is a cause and effect there. And finally, lastly, among the first things you need to know this morning. Again, among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, I love this story. This is definitely something that you want to know to keep you healthy and add years to your life, because we all want to live longer, right? It says here, flexibility can add years to your life. We're not talking about the flexibility of, you know, being flexible. Oh, where you want to go to eat tonight? What do you want to do? What movie you want to see? Not that kind of flexibility. We're talking about actual physical flexibility can add years to your life. This according to a new study, which has found that individuals with greater body flexibility have a lower risk of premature death, which I always thought was kind of a strange term when you really think about it. Premature death. How do they know that it's premature? I mean, how do they know? That would seem to indicate that somebody somewhere knows what age you should die at, so they can tell whether your death is premature or not. But anyway, I digress. A comprehensive flexibility assessment tool called the FlexiTest. I'm not making this up. The FlexiTest evaluated the range of motion in 20 different joint movements across seven major joints in the body, the ankles, knees, hips, the trunk of your body, so right around the lip, the hips, your wrists, your elbows, and your shoulders. Is that all seven? Ankles, knees, hips, trunk, wrists, elbows, shoulders. Yeah, that's seven. And the test represents an individual's overall body flexibility with those seven major points. The study involved more than 3,000 middle-aged adults, two-thirds of whom were men, between the ages of 46 and 65, and they found that the guys in the lowest 10% of flexibility scores had a 21.2% death rate, while women with a 2% flexibility score had a 15.4% death rate. Their conclusion, flexibility can add years to your life. Those with greater body flexibility have a lower risk of premature death. I would think, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, I would think that men in the lowest or highest of flexibility scores all have a 100% death rate when you think about it. But they say, no, it's a 21.2% death rate. So what does that mean? Like 79%? Will live forever if you're properly flexible. I don't know. Anyway, there you go. Start flexing, start stretching, and making yourself flexible, and you too can live forever. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny skies today with a high around 80, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. The Seneca County Drug Task Force, along with additional officers from the Fostoria Police Department, the Sandusky County Drug Task Force, and the ATF, executed a drug-related search warrant on a residence on Columbus Avenue in Fostoria. Authorities say the search warrant led to the confiscation of suspected oxycodone pills, crack cocaine, cocaine, criminal tools, firearms, and U.S. currency. The task force says various charges are pending against the residents upon the conclusion of the entire drug investigation. Fostoria Police Chief Gabe Wedge says they continue to focus on the problem areas of their communities, and with help from community members, they're capable of removing drugs and guns from the streets and prosecuting the offenders. Get more on this story on our website. An Ohio man received a letter from the Ohio Secretary of State's office threatening prosecution if he votes in November, despite the fact that he is a U.S. citizen.
Nicholas Ross has lived in the United States for 28 years. He was born in England, and he's been here legally on a green card. He married a U.S. citizen in 2000, and they have a family here in Central Ohio together. In May, he officially became a U.S. citizen. At his naturalization ceremony, he registered to vote. And then in July, he received a letter from Secretary of State Frank LaRose's office that he says accused him of voter fraud and threatened jail time if he did not respond to confirm his citizenship in the United States.
ONN's Tara Jabor reporting. Findlay High School Trojans football team kicks off the season tonight, and head coach Stephan Adams says a lot of players stepped up in the offseason.
But we know that, you know, you don't just go out and replace that type of production. But what you hope you can do is you hope you can develop players to step in and do the best that they can do.
The Trojans kick off the season tonight at Central Catholic. Their home opener is next Friday against Lima at Donnell Stadium. You can see their full season schedule on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
There is just something special about those Friday night lights. New high school football season kicks off tonight if you are heading to the game. Looks like great weather will be in the upper 70s, partly cloudy skies at kickoff, mid-70s by halftime, lower 70s the end of the game. Certainly a very nice weather for a high school football game. You know, in years past, those first couple of weeks have been scorchers. Not so this week. And that is certainly good news, as The Trojans travel to Toledo Central Catholic right here on WFIN. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, host John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephen Adams.
Got to get guys in the weight room. You've got your 7-on-7s, your summer camp. Did you get the work from your guys that you were hoping for?
Yeah, definitely did. As far as the offseason goes, it was a great offseason for us. You know, definitely still that buy-in is there. I would say what was maybe a little different and unique about this year was we had a lot of multi-sport players. So maybe the weight room wasn't as packed all the time with our slots, but there was a lot of those guys are working out with their teams, and that's good. You want a lot of kids to play different sports. You want them to have an ultimate high school experience. So, you know, that created a busy summer. It's been fun this last month to really watch this team kind of really come together to gel, and we're excited about where we are now.
Now, as we head into the season, the headline is, of course, senior year for Georgia commit quarterback Ryan Montgomery.
Yep.
There are lots of expectations on him, those from the fans, from you as a coach, from the pundits who are evaluating him for the higher level of what he might be expected to do at the college level.
Yep.
So what are your expectations as you go into his senior year?
Yeah, I want him to really enjoy the moment. You know, I think sometimes in those seniors, and this is not just even him, but all across the board, they want to get senior year done so fast. You know, this is the last time that really you can enjoy a lot of time with the people that you grew up with, the kids you grew up with, enjoy these moments, experiences, opportunities to create experiences. So I think the biggest thing for me is just for him to really just enjoy the process. You know, be the same in those aspects, but really just enjoy each opportunity he has to be with his teammates and guys one last time.
What he's going to be able to do depends on what kind of protection he gets.
Yep.
And the support from the run game.
Yeah.
So who are you looking to get the ball to?
Running back-wise, Griffin Lane, Sonny Hines, you see a combination. Could even see a young buck, Ramir Williams, maybe get a shot as well, too. On the outside, you're going to see Jacob Ragland, kind of a staple from last year. Reese Little, a staple from last year. Might see a combination of Carter Emke, Jack Rhodes, Brian Guthrie, Bryson Smith. I mean, we have a lot of guys that we can put in a lot of spots. That's probably what's different about this year than last year. Last year, kind of knew who we had, and those guys lined up in those spots and stayed in those spots. This year, we have a bunch of guys we've put in a lot of different positions to try to help them be successful.
So once we move over to the defensive side, you've got that good bit of varsity experience coming back.
Yep. So, you know, lost one guy on the line last year. Returning is Ashton Yeager, once again, a four-year varsity player for us as well, too. Ian Smith, a senior, played a lot last year. Xavion Garcia, nose tackle as well, too. And then you'll see Keegan Klotz, a guy who's had a lot of experience mixed in with Carson Smith. So I think we have a nice rotation right now.
What's the linebacker core look like?
Campbell Lane was a guy who played last year, got injured, really did a good job this offseason of rehabbing and getting back as fast as possible, has looked great. Jacob Vance, who filled in for him, is a returner for us as well, too. And then Miles Bailey. You could see Frank Azaroff, or you can even see Chase Harris. So we have some decent depth there.
Defensive backfield, quite a bit back, as I recall.
Israel Moore is a guy that's kind of our staple. Mm-hmm. He's our staple defensive back. He's a senior. I've been so proud of his leadership and the presence he's brought to that group. He's got a great spirit and a great personality. And everywhere you go, you can hear and feel Israel.
Now, this is the one time that you get a chance to speak direct to the people that you want to see in the stands on Friday night. Anything you want to say to the Trojan faithful?
Excited. I hope and I feel strongly. I think the excitement's there. I think people will want to come out and watch and see. We want to have everybody in the stands, and I think we've traveled really well these last couple of years. Our kids love it. They need it. And, you know, I told the guys one thing: in order to get people to continue to, you know, show up, you got to put out a good showing. So want to see our whole community come out on Friday night and cheer us on, and we'll feed off the energy the crowd gives.
Findlay head coach Stephen Adams with Coach's Corner host John Marshall earlier this week on the Coach's Corner. Our coverage of the Trojans and the Irish begins with tonight in high school football at 6:10 this evening. Other games across our family of stations over on 100.5 WKXA this evening. Van Buren travels to Fostoria, and on 106.3 The Fox, it should be a good matchup between Ottawa Glandorf and Liberty Benton. Some of the other action from around the area: Macomb will host Columbus Kip tonight. Arlington will welcome the Hardin Northern Polar Bears. Arcadia and Corey Rawson hook up at Corey. Riverdale is at Bucyrus tonight. And let me see here. There was Van Loo meeting North Baltimore this evening. Some of the games from around the area And you can follow all of the action in real time on the high school football scoreboard powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College on WFIN.com. So first round play in the U.S. Open tennis tournament begins Monday. For over 30 years, IBM has worked closely as the technology partner of the USTA to elevate the digital and fan experience for the U.S. Open. And this year, new technology solutions will be introduced to enhance the fan experience. Christy Kolsky is the program director for IBM Sports and Entertainment. I'm guessing that's another way of saying artificial intelligence. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right. We're very excited to bring the power of generative AI to the U.S. Open this year.
Okay, so how does this work in the context of the U.S. Open? Kind of lay this out for us here.
Sure. IBM has been, as you noted, IBM has been partners with the USTA for more than 30 years, and we're very focused on bringing new digital innovations to life to help them deliver a world-class experience to millions of tennis fans around the world. This year, we're excited to bring the power of generative AI to create new insights and content for fans. If you think about it, this is a long tournament. It's 2 weeks, 254 matches, hundreds of players, simultaneous action happening on 17 different courts. That's a lot of content. And it's really quite a daunting task for the USTA editorial team to watch all those matches, summarize all those matches, and get it published out onto the digital platforms. They do it, obviously, for the biggest matches and the biggest players. Mm-hmm. But every single one of those players has a home country and a fan base and people who want to follow more than just the scores and stats. And that's where the power of AI can come in. We're actually using AI to generate pre-match preview bullets, post-match summary bullets, and long-form match summaries that within minutes of a match's conclusion that really will summarize the results of the match but go a little deeper into the outcomes, the shifts in the momentum, and the play. These will be published through internal platforms for USTA editorial staffers to review, mm-hmm. to ensure accuracy. They might put a personal spin on it, and then it will be published out into the digital platforms within minutes of play concluding. In addition to match reports, we also have an AI-powered solution called AI Commentary. This is where we're actually taking match highlights, again, from the outer courts that don't quite get as much coverage, mm-hmm. and we're adding AI-generated spoken commentary to those highlights to give more context. Now, this solution was introduced last year, but we're enhancing this feature with more content and more expressive content. And finally, we're really excited to be introducing the IBM Slam Tracker, a redesigned IBM Slam Tracker. Within this, there'll be AI-generated content as well as likelihood to win predictions, so you can follow along for finding the most exciting matches, the closest matches. And again, really just new ways for fans to engage with everything that's happening around the tournament.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask. You know, how is artificial intelligence changing the way fans view that experience of sports for fans? And how does this tap into what fans are looking for when you think about the future of sports moving forward?
Yeah, fans are looking for more real-time information, mm-hmm. deeper insight, deeper content, likelihood, predictive content, and personalized around, their favorite players. So they're not just following the local sports team anymore. They're following a lot of individual players across country, across states. And they really want to follow and their favorite players with those deeper insights.
Now, we mentioned as all of this as it relates to the U.S. Open, because, again, begins on Monday. But there are other sports partnerships that IBM has where folks can see this same kind of technology in action as well.
Yes, we've been longtime partners with events like the Masters. This past year, we rolled out some AI-powered fan experiences called Hole Insights. This was actually an all-new feature for the first time, really breaking down current and historical play for every hole on the course. We're adding AI commentary to highlights at the Masters as well, and even Spanish commentary, helping to scale that to new audiences and new languages. For Wimbledon, we launched an AI-powered feature called Catch Me Up. This was really focused on individual players. You know, as people tune into the tournament, they could really quickly get up to speed with everything that had happened first or second week around individual players and matches. And finally, in the case of the ESPN Fantasy Football, we've been working with them to bring AI-powered insights to how players are drafted, how you set your lineup from week to week, and even a trade analyzer.
Just amazing stuff. And, you know, thinking even more broadly, I mean, at its core, sports is a business. So how does this sort of all of this sort of reflect the way that businesses are using artificial intelligence? Because this is the big buzzword these days. Some businesses are really embracing this. Others are maybe a little more cautious, a little more apprehensive. What does this say about the way businesses can and are using AI?
Yeah, I think a lot of businesses and industries are starting to experiment with how AI can transform their industry. We are seeing some use cases around customer care. We even have AI-powered chatbots that are offering more personalized feedback and experience, more dialogue as opposed to the historical brittle phone trees that we may all remember. we're seeing a lot of companies start to experiment with using it to improve productivity and scale expertise. In the case of IBM, we're starting to even use these tools to help my profession, to help marketing, to produce content. So you can use AI almost like a trusted colleague delivering you a first draft. And then it's an opportunity to then, you know, refine and edit from there. But at least you're not starting from scratch.
Right.
We're even seeing a technical front. Developers are starting to use this technology to generate suggestions for code. And again, kind of jump starting that development process. And we're seeing a lot of industries use it to make more data-driven business decisions.
So not only speeding up the process, again, as it relates to a lot of the stuff going on with the U.S. Open, not only speeding up the process of getting those highlights and those recaps on the various matches, but actually even expanding on that and doing things that traditional methods wouldn't really be able to do. It's just fascinating stuff. Again, Christy Kolsky is a program director of IBM Sports and Entertainment, talking about the way IBM and artificial intelligence is enhancing the fan experience at the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament, which begins next week. Where do we get more information on all of this, Christy?
You can check out IBM.com/sports.
All right. Christy Kolsky, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, of all the things that parents need to do at back-to-school time, one of the most important is to get them into the family doctor for a general wellness checkup. Not to pile one more thing on top of an already hectic time, but Dr. Arethusa Kirk is with us this morning, Chief Medical Officer for United Healthcare Community Plan. We've actually talked about some specific things like getting hearing and vision checked and why those things are important, but what we're talking about here is just kind of a general wellness check. When it comes to health and wellness for our kids, Dr. Kirk, what do parents need to be thinking about?
Well, thank you so much for hosting me today. You know, back to school, we're thinking about school supplies, school clothes, but it's a great time for parents and caregivers to be thinking about the physical, mental, and social well-being of their children. And that includes these regular wellness checks, which includes some screenings, tests, and immunizations, and overall check for development.
So what kind of tips can you offer to help parents kind of prepare for these appointments? Like we said, it's just one more thing in a long list of things that we have to do getting ready for back to school, but it is important. So kind of lay this out for us.
Yeah, sure. Well, so, you know, pediatrics is fundamentally about prevention and early intervention so kids can grow and thrive. The first is understanding and knowing and preparing for the schedule of exams, which you can do actually is before you leave your exam, get a sense of when the next exam should be scheduled and what to prepare for. The second is as children grow in age, there's different tests, labs, and immunizations, but some of them are pretty standard, like vision, hearing, and flu is recommended for kids 6 months and above. We also have lead screening for those children that are younger, in certainly starting at 12 months, but we're also screening to make sure that there's no lead exposure. And then finally, be ready to dialogue, because this is an important time to have a conversation with your practitioner about your child's health and wellness. And so prepare those questions ahead of time so that you can get them addressed.
Are there specific questions that parents should ask if the doctor doesn't bring them up? Are there specific areas where we should really be focusing?
Well, the first would be really to understand what's next. So which labs and screenings are being done and what is the reason behind them? Secondly, immunizations, because the immunization schedule changes over the course of a lifetime, and it's important to understand whether you're up to date, get a copy of the immunization record, and think about when the next immunizations are due so you can get those scheduled on time. And then thirdly, from a laboratory standpoint, we're generally looking for making sure there's not anemia, lead exposure, and then later in childhood, looking for things like dyslipidemia or cholesterol screening.
You bring up a good point. These are screenings that will change as kids age. As they get older, the expectations and what this will entail will gradually evolve as well, right?
Correct. So we know that there's about 8 visits before you're 15 months of age, and that's because infants and early children are developing so rapidly that we need to be really tracking their development across multiple streams of development quickly and getting the immunizations that they need. But as they get older, those screening and wellness checks really space out to annually. And so, that really matches the kind of developmental speed by which we're growing up.
Again, Dr. Arethusa Kirk is a chief medical officer for United Healthcare Community Plan, talking about the importance of getting our kids in for those regular routine wellness checkups and exams and evaluations. Very important to do. This is a great time of the year to do that as we're getting ready for back to school. And where can we get more information, more guidance for parents here?
Well, you can find information on our website at uhc.com/children's wellness, where you can view and download information on the well visits, vaccines, and other scheduling tips that I talked about.
Dr. Kirk, thanks very much for the reminders. We appreciate it this morning.
All right. Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
I love this first story because sometimes capturing criminals is just too easy. You don't need to necessarily overthink it. You know, I mean, criminals are not necessarily masterminds in most cases. So sometimes the simplest solution works the best. A woman in Santa Barbara used an Apple AirTag to catch thieves that have been stealing her mail at the Los Alamos post office. She had repeatedly been targeted by people stealing her mail, and so she put a tracking device in the mail, disguised it as a package that was being sent somewhere, and sure enough, it was stolen, and so she went to authorities and said, "Here's where they are," and sure enough, the AirTag led deputies to 2 thieves in Santa Maria who were arrested, and stolen mail, not just from her, but from many victims, was recovered at this residence. The woman's proactive approach resulted in the arrest of the suspects, who now face felony charges. The sheriff's office praised her actions, and they continue to investigate the case, aiming to connect with more victims who were impacted by the theft ring. So sometimes the simplest solutions are the best. You don't have to overthink this. put an AirTag in the mail and track it. It'll lead you right to them. Gotta love technology. This item here is completely the inverse of that. Sometimes the criminals make it far too difficult on this. They go overboard. They just make it a far more elaborate production than really it should be. A Kentucky man faked his death in an effort to avoid paying child support. Jesse Kipp, age 39, of Somerset, Kentucky, has now been sentenced to 9 years in prison for computer fraud and aggravated identity theft after trying to skip out on his outstanding child support bill. Carlton Shire, U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Kentucky, said that Mr. Kipp accessed Hawaii's death registry system in January of last year, apparently using login details from a living doctor in another part of the states to create a case for his own death, and completed the worksheets, the paperwork necessary for a death certificate to be issued in the state of Hawaii. That's a pretty elaborate scheme. And again, I would think that if you have that sort of work ethic to go through that much trouble to fake your own death, maybe you just get a job and you'd be able to pay your child support. I don't know. Call me crazy, but I think we might be on to something. Mr. Kipp was actually registered for a time as a deceased person on various government databases and used other state registry systems and private networks to steal from real people and attempt to sell the access on the dark web. So, again, if he'd have channeled all of that energy into something legal and gainful employment, might not found himself in such trouble to begin with. Let's see. A couple of other items in the broken news this morning. The odd and unusual side of the headlines. The family of Sandra Bonilla is locked in a legal battle with her apartment complex in San Antonio, Texas. You see, Ms. Bonilla, sadly, passed away back in June. But now her family says, even though they have followed the law, sent a termination letter to the management at her apartment complex, they say they have received a bill demanding more than $15,000 because, according to the letter, the apartment complex, the ownership group, the apartments, says the 91-year-old had almost a year left on her lease. And by dying ahead of the time that her lease was up, they now owe the entire year of her lease that she had left. And the bill also includes an $1,100 lease break fee. She didn't just move out. She died. And they want to charge her for breaking the lease by dying. The notice included a message that the bill would be sent to a collection agency unless payment is promptly made. Lawyers for the family say Texas law actually only allows a landlord to charge up to 30 days rent, 1 month's rent, after notice of death is received. And they sent the notice of death. The apartment complex wants to pay for the entire year plus a fee for breaking the lease. Nice. And I think they're going to win in court. I think the family's going to win. I don't think this is going to be an open and shut case, but wow. And finally, what a hassle, you know? And finally, in the broken news this morning, a really sweet story. This is absolutely fabulous here. A long-lost Purple Heart has been returned to the family of a World War II veteran from New Jersey who served in the European theater in the Great War. Margarita Manhart never thought that she would see her Uncle George's medal again after it went missing decades ago. Decades ago. Ms. Manhart said George Cerrito earned it after suffering traumatic brain injury while serving as a gunner in a tank unit in Europe. in World War II. His Purple Heart and Good Conduct Medal turned up, though, recently at a swap meet in Texas. Now, again, he's from New Jersey. It ended up at a swap meet in Texas. How it got there, who knows? What a story that medal could tell. An Air Force veteran bought the medals and returned them to a Vermont nonprofit called Purple Hearts Reunited. It is a group that returns missing medals, and sure enough, they track down the Purple Heart to Uncle George's grateful niece, and she now has his Purple Heart and Good Conduct Medal that she thought she would never see again after it had gone missing decades ago. Love that story. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Findlay Trojans play here on WFIN. This is Tim Montgomery. Join me and Coach Cliff Height for all the action of Trojan football. You'll get every exciting play each Friday night, all season long, home and away. The Trojans open the season this Friday night at Toledo Central Catholic. Findlay Trojan football is here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Have you ever had a house guest from hell? A new survey asked Americans about this, and two-thirds of respondents in the survey said that they have welcomed a house guest with open arms, told them to make themselves at home, and regretted that later. 72% have told a guest to make the space their own when they come in and stay for a few days, right? And the house guests come, make yourself at home. 72% have done that. 91% have admitted that was a bad idea. 91% have regretted it afterward. Some of the reasons that respondents to the survey have regretted allowing people to make themselves at home include guests expecting more meals than are planned. The guests expecting you, the host, to make more meals than you had planned. 54% said that was the worst behavior of their house guest from hell. 45% say guests that overstay their welcome. That's the worst behavior. And I would have thought that that would have been much higher, but 39% said making a mess. Guests that make a mess is terrible. And I thought this was kind of interesting. They asked, who makes the worst house guests? And 42% said their friends. Their friends are the worst house guests. 39% said siblings. And 37% said their in-laws make the worst guests. So in-laws actually only number three on the list. But those were the top three. For one-third of those in the survey, a little bit more than one-third actually, 35%, the situation has become unpleasant enough that they have actually told someone that they are a bad guest. Have you ever done that? Sat down your guest and been, you know, lowered the boom and say, you are just a horrible house guest. 35% said that they've done that. Now, on the flip side, 75% of us believe that we are a good host. And 31% would categorize ourselves as a very good host. Case in point, over 4 in 10, nearly half, 49%, say that they have purchased a new bed or a new mattress for people to sleep on when they stay the night. And they've actually gone and bought a new mattress. 45% say they have purchased new furniture to ensure that their guests are comfortable. I don't know that we've ever done that. I mean, we did just not all that long ago buy a new mattress for our guest bedroom. But it really needed replacing. But buying new furniture, that's pretty extreme. So, yeah, we generally like to be good guests. But you know, there are those who will take advantage of some of the other bad behaviors by guests in someone else's home. 36% say guests who hog the bathroom are just, you can't stand that. 32% say those guests that keep you up late past your bedtime. You know, when you have to go to sleep and get up early the next morning, but your house guests just won't let you go to bed. 23% say waking the rest of the house up early is in bad form. 22% looked at guests who arrive uninvited. Ooh, have you ever had that? Somebody shows up at your door, you had no idea they were coming, and they expect to stay? 22% guests who arrive uninvited. A couple of other bad behaviors by guests in someone else's home. 21% say those that drink too much alcohol, drinking to excess. And 17% cite the guests that have broken one of your belongings. Oh, yeah. I had that happen, and that's awkward, to say the least. So as we've been talking about, the high school football season kicks off tonight, another season under the Friday Night Lights. College football. Well, actually, technically, there are some college football games this weekend, but college football, the season for everybody kicks off next weekend, then the NFL before too long.
Yep.
It is football season.
Yes.
And
yay,
that means it is tailgate season. And so in honor of the start of football, high school football first and the rest to follow, we have a collection of tailgate recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. My wife Kyra has joined me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So these are some terrific recipes that would be good for any tailgate or, you know, really any gathering.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't have to be a tailgate either. Maybe you're just having a watch party for the, you know, first week of football season or whatever. Got all the games on the tube or what have you. Great stuff to feed your guests. And we start with a buffalo chicken mac and cheese recipe.
Yes. Mm. So buffalo chicken, I mean, everybody, that's like a tailgate.
And mac and cheese.
Yeah, and mac and cheese. You know, so put them together.
Combine the two.
Why not?
You've got a winner here.
Yes. So one block of cream cheese softened, 1 cup of ranch dressing, 2/3 cup of buffalo wing sauce, 2 cups of rotisserie chicken, a 16-ounce of macaroni pasta, 1.5 cups of mozzarella shredded, 1 cup of cheddar shredded, 1 teaspoon of paprika, and optional is some blue cheese crumbs and green onions for serving.
Mm-hmm.
So preheat your oven to 375 degrees in a large pot. Add some water and salt. Let it come to a boil on the stove. Add the macaroni and cook for 8 to 10 minutes. Place your cream cheese in a large mixing bowl. Add the ranch dressing and sauce. Mix well until it's combined and the cream cheese is smooth. Add in your shredded chicken, half of your cheese, and your drained pasta. Then fold the ingredients using a spatula until evenly combined. Transfer to a greased 9x13-inch casserole dish. Top with the remaining cheese. Cover the top. Sprinkle with paprika. And bake at 375 degrees for about 20 minutes or so until golden brown.
I love it.
The other thing you could do with this is, if you don't want that golden brown crunchy, but you're taking it for a tailgate, you could also mix it all together and put it in your crock pot to keep it warm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And do it that way.
Do that. Yeah.
So that'd be a good
alternative as well.
Yes.
But I love the rotisserie chicken in that and everything.
Yes.
That is great stuff. Buffalo chicken mac and cheese. To go along with that, we have a recipe for a boat dip.
Yes. So this is 8 ounces of shredded cheddar cheese, 3 tablespoons of ranch powder, 1 packet, 2 teaspoons of taco seasoning, or tablespoons of taco seasoning, 1 10-ounce can of Rotel tomatoes, undrained, 16-ounce container of sour cream, and 1/2 sweet onion chopped up. So in a large mixing bowl, add all the ingredients and stir well to evenly combine. Chill in your refrigerator for 1 hour before serving. best if you make this the night before, then all your flavors all come together.
Yep.
Makes it even yummier. And then you can serve that with tortilla chips, Doritos, raw veggies, or spoon over some tacos.
Mm, okay.
So any of those things.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things, if you get invited or something happens last minute. Yeah, this is one of those recipes.
Although you want to make it the night before, so
right.
You know, if it's last minute,
right.
But still,
I mean, if you're going there and all that stuff, it still has time to.
And who doesn't love a good dip?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. So
really
this is
easy
one
to
of
do.
Those real quick.
Just throw it together, mix it all up. And you're done.
And you're done.
And then for a dessert or for a special snack or a
this
treat
like
for all
one
of
those
your
hand, you know, you can just put it, scoop it up in a cup and munch on it or whatever.
Treat for all of the party goers.
Yes.
These are churro snacks.
Yes. So this is 5 cups of honeycomb cereal, 2/3 cup of brown sugar, 1/2 cup of butter, which is 1 stick, 1/3 cup of corn syrup, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, and 1.5 teaspoons of cinnamon. So with this one, you preheat your oven to 350 degrees and line a baking sheet with parchment paper, pour cereal into a large bowl, then set that aside. Then in a medium-sized saucepan, add your brown sugar, butter, corn syrup, and then stir that constantly. And you want to stir that constantly because you don't want that to burn. So bringing to the mixture to a boil, then continue cooking for 1 minute. Remove pan from the heat, stir in your vanilla and your baking soda. And when you do that, when you add that baking soda, it's going to bubble up like crazy. So it's okay.
Okay.
Don't be shocked.
Yeah.
It's just different. So it is. And then when you add that,
it's like
baking
a little
soda,
science experiment
yes,
at the same
it is,
time.
Sort yeah. of. Yes. Adding that baking soda, it just kind of bubbles up and changes colors and it's crazy. So mixture will bubble and expand. Pour the mixture over the cereal and toss to evenly combine in a small bowl. Sift together your granulated sugar and your cinnamon, then sprinkle over the cereal. Toss again until evenly coated. Transfer cereal to your prepared baking sheet and bake for 8 minutes, stirring halfway through. So what I usually do is I set my timer for 4 minutes instead of 8 minutes.
Makes sense.
Yes. And then do that. And then take it out, stir it, then put it back in. Allow the cereal to cool, then break into bite-sized pieces, store in an airtight container, and this'll store for a week or so.
Yeah.
So
good stuff.
Yeah, this is one you can make ahead of time.
Yeah.
And not worry about it.
The recipes for the buffalo chicken mac and cheese, the boat dip, and the churro snacks are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
So you can go there at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. Follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page if you don't already. You can also find the link at goodmornings.net. We have it linked up there, and you can find all of those recipes, all of the recipes from Kyra's Kitchen are posted there each and every week, so you can go back to one that you might have missed from last week or the week before, or whatever it might happen to be. And also, as we always mention, if you have a way of, you know, doing something different, adding a twist to one of these recipes, you can share that on the Facebook page. If there's a recipe that you have that, is a favorite, especially like a tailgate recipe or something like that, there's one that you have that's a favorite.
Because I want to do another one.
Yeah. So, you know, by all means, share that. We'll put out a call for all of your best tailgate recipes.
Yes.
You can share it on Facebook. You can message Kyra privately if you want to do it that way. Or
that
you
works.
Can even email it. You can post it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, message us on that, or you can email us. goodmornings@wfin.com is the email address if you want to do it that way to share your recipes, or if you are looking for something.
Yes.
You know, something that maybe you had somebody else brought to your tailgate and say, oh, this was really good.
Yeah.
It was, you know,
had
a recipe of
this.
Yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll investigate.
We'll put Kyra on the case and get the answer for you. Again, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, and you can also go to goodmornings.net. the recipes, the tailgate recipes from Kyra's Kitchen, my wife Kyra this morning. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. You know what it is, goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for a daily email newsletter. There's a link there to contact us directly if there's something you want to send via email, and lots more. Again, goodmornings.net is our little corner of the World Wide Web. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.